See, we're ready to go live. All right, we're live. Hi, Jessica. Good to see
Hi,
you.
Peter. I'm so excited about going live today. This is going to
Yeah, I know it's our first time. I don't know if we'll have anybody. If so, that's great. But this is our podcast, Drinks with Shrinks. I am your host, Peter Anderson, and
I'm Jessica Pachinas.
Jessica Pigeons. Yeah, Pachinas. What are you drinking tonight? Are you drinking
So I'm
anything?
kind of a downer. I'm having
Yeah.
some pomegranate tea only because it's really cold where I am. So I want a pomegranate tea.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. Now, when you say really cold, what do you mean by really cold? You're talking
Cold in
about like,
comparison to what it's been. It's really
oh, okay.
in the 50s. So I'm kind of, it's not
Yeah.
really cold. In New
Right.
England, it's a cold.
Right. No, I'm having a beer. So yeah, it's the first time on a podcast we have a beer. So today's kind of a heavy topic. So we're gonna be talking about infidelity and how to heal. I'd love to just define infidelity if that's okay. And then we could talk about what it's like for both parties. And then we could talk about places where you and I go often with clients so that they feel healed. So how about we try to start out with just like defining it? I mean, how would you define infidelity? And maybe just start with that.
So for me, I think that's a really good question, and I think everyone defines it a little bit differently. So how I define infidelity, I guess in my practice, is I really take the couple's lead and whatever they consider to be a betrayal, and that can take many different forms. It can be emotional, it can be physical. It's basically, in my eyes, if there's been some type of promise and or commitment, this unspoken rule, if you will, in the relationship that's been shared, and one party is, I guess, in violation of that. That to me is what constitutes a betrayal when it comes up in a way too, where there's damaging impacts to the relationship, where it kind of, in some ways, really attacks the foundation of that relationship. So I think it can be defined in a lot of different ways, but that I guess is the tenets by kind of which, or the framework by which I put the I define betrayal by. I mean, is for you, is it similar, or do you have like a little bit of a different stance on that?
Yeah, I like how you I really like how you said that. I mean, it's I mean, I see it as like a broken of a trust or a bond when, and I would even say that it I mean, because there's different types of infidelity. I always break them down in between emotional and physical. I almost look at infidelity, I break it down almost like categories of abuse the same way, but it's very different. I don't, you know how like, I mean, it's very, very different. But you know, like physical, emotional,
Psychological.
spiritual, psychological. I also, you know, I think you could also probably break that down with somewhat infidelity. Usually it's only seen mainly on physical versus and emotional when you start to get too close to someone other than your relationship partner, I would just say. I mean, that's the most, you know, common. I guess that's emotional infidelity, obviously, and then physical infidelity, the same thing. But yeah, it's just when I'm starting to become reliant on someone else other than my primary person, my in this case my wife or my partner, you know, so it's it can be very, very very deep, very shattering, because it's often the first word that often comes out of people's mouths when it occurs is that I have felt betrayed, you know. So it's more than just a breakup. It's more than just you know,
100%.
flirting or something else. I mean, it's kind of like it's a big word. I you know, and I mentioned this, and I thought about it for a while. I still save it for myself. I try to keep it within the context of marriage. That's just me. But I respect my client's definition of it, you know. I mean, so I'm not going to like push that, but I kind of view it in the context of marriage, just because I often will see something like cheating on a girlfriend very, very different than cheating on a wife, for example. Even though they both feel very hurtful, I see like infidelity as like the deepest part where it's in the context of marriage, but I'm okay using the word cheating in the context of dating, which is, you know, if they want to use infidelity, I'm not going to correct them. But I would say in my own context, that's kind of what I use. I say that word for marriage, but if somebody, if a client like comes in and uses it for something else, I'm going to respect that. But yeah.
A lot of sense to me. And sure. Adding to what you said too, I think another layer to this too, or a framework that I utilize a lot, is there is an element too of trauma, right? That also happens. And I think that's another piece of this when we're looking at how we either define it or what it looks like. Because you might also see a lot of the things you would see in a trauma response, right? Hypervigilance, the scaffolding of a person's, you know, beliefs, worldview, their ideas of what this relationship was, really being ripped out from under them and them questioning a lot of things. And so intrusive thoughts, nightmares, a lot of those things overlap. So I think too, when we talk about betrayal, infidelity, the intensity of that and what that can actually look like in a partnership, in a relationship, is also something that I try to talk to clients about. Because it, in that way, I feel like it's a very unique kind of betrayal.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. And I do think it's good that we keep to that word betrayal too, because infidelity is, you know, I think I've seen also, you know, a lot of people be very, very hurt, not even so much with an affair, but, you know, anything that just kind of, they feel like it violated their committed contract. You know, I thought I trusted you. I thought I respected you. I thought that this would never happen. And I think with betrayal too, there's almost like you're doing something that the two of you had never agreed upon. And this is where it often gets kind of tricky on how to define it, because as a clinician, I've often heard it defined very, very different ways. Like I've known some clients that would never have said that this was really cheating, when I'm thinking to myself, gosh, that actually sounded like cheating, and vice versa. I don't know if you've ever had that issue, you know, but I think, you know, betrayal is really are founded on two building blocks. And I was just reading something by Gottman right before I came in, you know, got on this meeting. And I think he said like deception and a yearning for some type of an emotional bond outside of the relationship. Those two things are often kind of, you know, those are the two building blocks between infidelity. So how did you deceive that person? In other words, what did you do that that person never knew that you would do? And that's where I think that gets kind of tricky. So for certain relationships, it's like, okay, it's all right to be best friends with the opposite sex. That's totally fine. Even go to their house. I know some couples are like, they're fine with that. Whereas others are like, wait, what did you do? You went to somebody's house? You know, it's like, you know, so I think that has to play a really important role, that, you know, what was deceived, what, you know, in this relationship, and how can we get to the bottom of some of this? What would you go ahead? Yeah.
No, I was just with you. I love that. I love that definition and looking at it that way, because it is, it's really calling into question how, and maybe this feeds into where we're going too, is how are we defining our marriage, our relationship? What does that actually mean, that commitment that we're making? And I think that's what it's really calling into question, is what is that set of rules that we want to operate by and abide by in our relationship? And it's taking a really hard look at that. Sorry, I know.
Well, and also I think it's always good too, like, you know, when, so that's the definition of it. Let's kind of break that down a little bit. I mean, what are some things that let's talk about some things that we see. I wonder if our, you know, if anybody's listening, or what are some things that you and I see that, let's maybe talk about like warning signs. What are some warning signs that you often hear with clients, like maybe before the affair? Are there things that you are often hearing or that pricks your ears? Like, whoa, I wonder if something's kind of going on in this relationship. So what are some of the things that maybe that we look for?
So, and I'm going to, I defer a little bit to Gottman in this, because he's done a lot of research in this, and as well as other therapists as well, and people in the field. But using some, I guess, of his language of, I think it, you start to see some turning away from our partner, right? So a kind of a level of disengagement that happens, and where we're not really responsive to or being attuned to the needs of the other person. And we start maybe to turn toward other sources of having our own needs met. And that can happen incrementally. It could be a conversation. It could be, you know, just doing activities more separate from the partner. And I'm not saying it's bad to have individual interests or anything like that, but to a different level, right? Where we're really starting to put up walls between our partner, and we're opening up windows. And this is kind of from Shirley Glass's work to other things. And so I think there's also, there can be, not necessarily always, but there can be also conflicts where things escalate or shut down, where we might even start to avoid conflict discussions. Again, we're just kind of shutting ourselves off and closing ourselves off to our partner. And I also see, and I don't know if you see this, Peter, but the how we see our partner, I think, changes too. I think we start tuning into more of the perceived, quote unquote, like negative traits. And or we start to maybe even speak negatively or speak of our partner in a negative light to others. And so those are some of the things I would say that, I mean, there's a lot there, but we're basically not making decisions that maximize the interest of our relationship of our partner. And I think that in that way, there's just this breakdown. And couples, or one of the couples may feel like, person in the couple is saying, are you there for me? Right. There's this level of disconnect and distance and disengagement that I tend to see. I mean, do you see other things, or do you see common things than that? What's your experience?
Yeah. I mean, I think with one thing that I often see almost in all affairs, there is an excessive amount of gaslighting. And I've seen a lot of people admit to that after the fact. And I know that's such a common word, but really what it is, it's, you know, to explain to our listeners, there's a really famous, there's a movie that came out called Gaslight, and basically the husband is convincing the woman that the gas lights that are in the house are not actually dimming, where she continues to think that they are, and she's right, but he continues to convince her that, he basically tries to convince her that she's just, quote, going crazy. And so what I often notice is that when it comes to deception, going back on that, I think everybody knows that I've ever met knows when they're being lied to. I remember once having a case where the guy, this is years and years ago. And, you know, he had Down syndrome. Maybe his IQ is 60 at the most. And I remember him coming in one day and he was so upset. He was so angry at his mom. And I just sat him down. I was like, what's going on? He was like, my mom lied to me. And then I talked to mom and I said, what's going on? And she just said, yeah, I lied to him. And I was just like, okay. And what that taught me was, regardless of intelligence, I think we all know when something's off, like when we're being lied to, and we can't put our finger on it. And I've never seen a case where the spouse was utterly surprised. I think they've been surprised. I'm not going to deny that. But like, I've never seen a case where if you asked her or asked him, were you totally surprised? They've always said no. I knew something was off. And because of that, if through deception, there's this excessive amount, you have to gaslight basically to act like everything's okay. And so one common occurrence that you might hear is like, no, you're being irrational. You know, no, I wasn't talking to her more than, what are you talking about? You know, you're being jealous again. I often see that, you know, from both genders, you know, that's not just a male thing and a female thing. I've seen it both. Yeah. Happen. So I think that often, high defensiveness when she is just asking very general questions, or he's just asking very general questions about a friend, you know, of a huge amount of protectiveness about that particular person. So I would say those are some warning signs that, you know, that I kind of keep a pulse on. But yeah, those are definitely some things. Well, let's just talk about, does it break a marriage or can people heal? I mean, what's our experience of that? I mean, I don't mind going first. I know you were coming, you know, so, I mean, but if you want to go first too, I mean, yeah, I'm asking, you know, so.
Well, and also about the gaslighting, I think part of, I see that too. And I think that's also part of what makes the healing process also particularly painful and difficult, because I think that, again, when you might have an inkling that something's off and you bring it up and then it gets shut down, or you're told, oh no, you're crazy, or it gets turned back on you, then it really is like, how do I trust again these words? Like, I think of it like a balloon. How do words have meaning again? You know, because all the meaning's been deflated. So how do we put that meaning back? And so I 100% think people can, I'm not saying this is a universal, but I believe, and I've seen that people can come back and really reestablish and recreate a marriage where they are capable of healing and restoring trust. Is that a process? 100%. And it demands a lot on both sides. And I think that's the part where it's, we have to be able to and commit to really riding that wave. And it is painful.
Yeah.
It's a devastating wave. But if two people are open to exploring that, and they're understanding that it is going to be difficult, it is going to be trying at times, and it is going to take time, I think people can definitely recover from a betrayal or infidelity. And I actually think it can make a relationship stronger for it. In that, I think it builds a level of resiliency also in the relationship of having gone through something like this and being able to recover. You know, I think also the stakes are higher potentially too.
Yeah, no, I like that too. I mean, I do want to also just maybe talk a little bit too about, you know, when it starts, like when you think about somebody becoming a cheater, for example, like how does that happen? You know, because I do think there needs to be an element of that. Like how does that occur? Some of the stuff that I've often seen, you know, the person that has gone, you know, outside the bond or outside the promise or that relationship, they do feel very lonely. I love what you said earlier. There's that bit of connection, you know? But one thing that I will see that's consistent is these kind of like negative comparisons that will come out quite a bit. You know, that comes up so much. And that's usually when I know, that's sometimes when I know as a clinician that this person, my client, may be thinking about going outside the relationship because they start to negatively compare their partner with other people that they may be seeing at work, or maybe a previous boyfriend or a previous girlfriend. And that goes really fast. I think that's where that's where they surprise themselves so fast. I can't tell you the number of people that are like, you know, I never thought I would be the one. I never thought I would be the one that would cheat on my wife or cheat on my husband. And my heart breaks for a lot of those people. I think they're surprised by it. And I think that's where we talk so much about contempt. I the longer I've been doing this, I've just really seen just how toxic contempt is. And I think that negative comparison is kind of the heartbeat of contempt right there. If I can, if I can compare my wife, Bethany, say, for example, if she is not doing something that I want her to do, and I start thinking of some other girl, you know, that used to do that for me all the time, and then I just perseverate on that and perseverate and perseverate. And then then next thing I know, I fantasize. Next thing I know, I'm like, ooh, I would just be so much happier with this person. And then, you know, it's like a frog in water. You know, next thing one thing often is. For me, I think that's probably been the fastest. That's been the fastest, like why people will often go down that road is that whole, man, once they get on that negative comparison, it's really difficult. Usually you have to kind of pull them back a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, what about for you on that piece? I mean, anything that you notice, like why people cheat or, and then after that, I would love to talk about like how we heal, like how does the victim heal from that? So, yeah. But
I really resonated. We're talking about loneliness because I think in coming back a little bit to the Gottman's research is that more marriages are going to end in ice than fire. Right. And I think loneliness is something that can be very eroding, and it's something that really sets the stage for, if that isn't addressed in a relationship, then again, people are going to kind of also develop the script that I can't turn to you. You're not there for me. So, you know, they're going to try to fulfill that need in other ways. And, but it's also sustaining that story that again, you're not the one that can be there for me, that I can connect to in those moments. And again, it just kind of breeds that disconnect. And I think it encourages the contempt that you're talking about, because I've lost in some ways also not only my belief that you're there for me, but I've also in some ways stopped cherishing the things that once drew me in and made me feel connected to you. Those things just kind of get lost. They're not as prominent.
Yeah. I don't
know if that's fair to say.
Yeah.
I don't know if you see that in a similar way.
Yeah. And I would even say it's like, it's years of that too. The years of feeling lonely, years of feeling just like undervalued or devalued. I think that's the part with men. I often say men often feel very devalued.
That's good.
And that, you know, and sometimes they have a point to that and sometimes they don't. Sometimes they may be kind of exactly like, you know, I don't want to make too many generalizations, but yeah, that loneliness, I think I see that more with women, I think. And I think that's why emotional affairs are often more common with women and physical affairs are often more common with men, I would even say, because there's that element of missing, you know, that person in your life. I think men often need that sense of value, feeling quote valued and whatnot. However, we also got to be really careful though too, because one of the things that Gottman does and I really love is that he's not Esther Perel, and maybe we should kind of address that, because on TikTok and I've met Esther Perel, I've seen her speak, and she's quite popular, and she's probably one of the more popular voices out there right now. And what she would say is, you should have the person that has been cheated on, the victim, validate and listen to the concerns of where the other came from. And Gottman would just be like, no, don't, because that actually is going to create a lot of trauma in them. And I would agree with that. I really would. I don't think we're called as clinicians to say, for example, if you and I are married and you cheated on me, and if we're seeing like a therapist, it would be so unethical for that therapist to be like, Peter, can you tell Jessica that she really did feel lonely when you didn't value that, and how she really does miss her lover. and Esther Perel actually does that. And there's not you could actually listen to some of her stuff, and she will actually really push the victim to actually, you know, validate quote unquote, the partner. I see that as abuse a lot of ways. I think she's very unethical doing that, totally way out of line. I don't think that we should ever do that, because that person has been betrayed. However, on an individual level, mm-hmm. I often will meet with that person and see where that person's coming from and hear where that person is coming from and try to help them kind of offer a healing remedy so that they can start to restore some type of connection, not just with their own hurt, but also with their partner, which needs to occur. So I want to kind of, not to get too nuanced here, because as much as we understand where the other person, you know, we want to validate, okay, yeah, you felt lonely and devalued. Where Gottman is a little different, he says still the way to heal is by really admitting the hurt that you caused. So maybe we could talk about that, because that's the, you know, so how do we heal? How do we really heal from infidelity if there is infidelity in our session? Because Gottman's going to say, you know, atonement.
Atone, attach.
Yeah, atonement. So maybe we could kind of like dissect that a little bit. So when someone's sitting in our office, we want,
And regarding to what you were talking about with Esther Perel, I think that it's also a matter of timing, right? When you're just starting that conversation, when something has just kind of come out, right, that this has happened, you're right, there is trauma there. And I think if you jump too quickly, and I guess this goes into that atone, attune, attach model, and that's why atonement and Gottman's model, I think, comes first largely, is because it's about processing the trauma and the hurt and showing remorse and taking responsibility, because regardless of the loneliness, and I'm not trying to diminish that, those things are very valid. However, there's still ultimately a choice, right? In how we address those emotions or what might have paved the pathway toward betrayal. And I think that's the element first. And there might also be a lot of questions. There might be, and I think too, there's some things when we're talking about, I guess for categorization here, the hurt partner, right? That it's something where you also have to be careful in how you ask those questions, because also we don't want to say, okay, it's okay because this is something that you're hurt. And because of this, it's also okay then to criticize, right? Or to fall into also other patterns that are not going to help the healing process, right? So I think it does take some guidance too in how we talk about these painful things. It's not about down-regulating anger, but it's also still, we want to be weary of those four horsemen that Gottman talks about.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe just today, because I want to keep it kind of, I like the succinct, maybe the next time we could follow up on a two-minute attachment, but let's just talk, a two-minute attachment. Maybe we could just end the next 5 minutes on atonement.
Yeah,
I know. Because when it comes to atonement, that is really how you're going to heal. If any of our listeners, you know, if you know somebody or if you've had an affair, there is hope. You know, we want to really encourage our listeners. There is hope. Going back to deception, I've seen clients just start to live by radical honesty, after coming out and just admitting what they did was wrong and becoming incredible people. I can't tell you the number of men, women that I've met who have had affairs and decided to just change their lives. Just said, you know what? I'm not going to lie anymore. I'm not going to BS people anymore. I'm tired of saying yes to everybody. I'm tired of, you know, I'm going to start like getting in touch with some of this pain. I'm going to stop hiding because I'm going to start, man, they became amazing, amazing people. One person, a friend of mine, his name is Daniel. He's a therapist. In fact, he's got a website called Compulsive Solutions. If anybody is listening who's struggling with sex addiction, he is a sex addiction counselor. Daniel's story, this is very, very public. So I don't break confidentiality in saying this, but Daniel used to see prostitutes 2 to 3 days a week. And, you know, met with over 50 or 60 of them. This is all public knowledge. And then he got help for his sex addiction. Now he has guided and helped thousands and thousands and thousands of men get clean from their sex addiction. And he's one of the most incredible people I know. Like, so there is hope. Like, there is hope. Like, for any, like, some amazing people I have seen get real help. And so we want to offer that. One of the things that's often frustrating about a lot of these affairs, it's often intertwined with some type of sex or love addiction. And sex and love addiction is one of those very misunderstood diagnoses that, you know, I remember talking to a sex addict once and he was like, you know, if you're an alcoholic, you can go in front of a Catholic church and everybody's clapping for you. You tell them you're a sex addict, everyone is wondering, are you wanting my kid or my wife? And it's super uncomfortable. And I hear it, you know, there's such a stigma, you know, it's like, no, I don't want either one of those. I'm just a sex, you know, so it was very informative that, you know, that there is a lot of help for those and not just sex, but also love addiction, people who have this addiction to just want to be accepted. So there's hope for you. And what I would say is, number one, see if you can get some help there. And then as you do, you can take full responsibility, because it's not a threat to your relationship to take full responsibility for when you did wrong. Your partner is just going to love you even more, especially if they're in a secure place. They're going to feel like, gosh, this is such a release. Or I'm so glad that my partner's home again, you know, that they're not hiding anymore. I can't tell you how often I've heard that. So try not to, you know, atonement is really a beautiful, beautiful thing. And what we mean by atonement is just coming clean. It's kind of like the first step to AA. Like I've messed up. I've made a mistake. This is how I've made a mistake. It's not your fault that I've made this mistake. I'm not saying that I didn't cheat on you because you did A, B, and C. Whenever I hear that, I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Let's go back to atonement, because it's, you know, your wife didn't make you cheat. Your husband didn't make you cheat. You cheated. Okay. Take ownership for that. I cheated. Just say it. I'm an alcoholic. Okay. It's not my mom's fault, dad's fault. I'm an alcoholic. I loved it. Okay. I cheated. I did it. Great. Okay. Let's move on. You know, I often tell people there's a sense of release there.
There is.
Oh, okay. Get that off your chest. All right, let's go. You know, I think one of the things that comes sometimes frustrates me with a lot of therapy, it's like, it seems like to be so overly apologetic all the time, you know, about like, oh, you know, don't go to, it's like, no, it's, there's something very beautiful and redemptive about just taking responsibility for yourself. It's so, freeing. Yeah, it's freeing. It's very freeing. So that's what we mean by atonement. It's very healing on the relationship. I don't know.
And I think atonement too, I love how you worded it. It is in some ways this really beautiful moment that can happen between two people, because it's also reestablishing a trust again. It's learning how, again, to kind of inflate meanings to the words, to practice love, to when I see someone take responsibility rather than meet the hurt or the pain, which is really hard to also to hear and sit with, but they can meet that with responsibility. I see the whole energy in a room change, where there's a level of security that's been given back to the relationship, to that connection. And I think that in and of itself is so validating and so healing, to be able to say, yes, I see your pain and I understand how these actions or these choices have contributed to that pain. And I get it. I see you. And I think when you can give that message to someone, that's so powerful, because it's also kind of addressing that doubt, that when you hear defensiveness, it can breed more anxiety, right? Because if you don't see this, if you're not owning this, then what's going to stop this from happening again in the future? And it's just going to ramp up that protector for that other person. And so by pausing and again, I also try to validate and hear and talk about if there is difficulty, and sometimes I do that in a one-on-one. Sometimes I feel like in this process, I do have one-on-one sessions with partners to give them
sometimes you have to
and
especially there's so much vitriol and anger against the other one. You often do.
I think so. Once you can, like you said, you can own it and you can say that again, it's just helping both of you to learn how, then what does forgiveness look like, how do we then move forward, but you need that step first. And I think that's with Esther Perel, when I come to the timing piece, if we I'm kind of with you in that, where for me, I kind of, my insights kind of go grit up when I hear that, because for me, it's just, I've seen how just even when there's struggles to take accountability first, it's just creating so many more walls that can prolong that healing process. And we're going to get to the things.
And also too, with trauma, like when they have been traumatized, when there's a victim, you know, trauma is no longer trauma. If your brain can take it can make a narrative after the very stressful event. And they've done tons of studies on that. It's not the act itself. It's the abandonment after the act is what creates trauma. So, you know, and Bessel van der Kolk, that's right from his work, you know, it's like, it wasn't necessarily the the actual awful event. It was, nobody believed them after they reported it, right? And that was awful. And so your brain actually, that's why when you do come clean, let's say, for example, if it's a guy and he's got a sex addiction, or it's a woman and she's got a love addiction or a sex addiction as well, you get help for that. You do so much service for your partner as well. You may think like, if I go too deep here, I'm going to be hurting my partner. Quite the opposite, because then your partner is able to like construct some type of a reality there. Maybe it's not an addiction. Maybe it was just wanting to be accepted, wanting to be loved ever since you were a kid. You need to kind of like explore that and really be able to share, let your partner in on where that comes from. Your partner is going to really need that because that's what that's often why the hurt partner will become very controlling, you know, because they feel so lost. And so they'll start searching their phone and start searching their computer and searching their history, thinking that's going to alleviate or bring more clarity. And never does. It just causes more and more pain. And then of course the other partner, he just, or she just kind of closes off, which then feeds the cycle. Oh my gosh, they're cheating again, which then feeds this person just back off even more. I've often will see that kind of that little play. And it could be very toxic real fast. So I think, you know, it's not the atonement piece. It's also just always letting your partner in on how you're understanding yourself a little bit more. And we also have to say too, it's like some strategies I would often tell people, if you are the hurt partner, you know, what I would say is if you just found out about the affair, get a therapist right away. And the second thing is, make sure that therapist, though, I will say this, is Gottman trained or emotion focused therapy trained, because you are going to get a whole lot of therapists who are going to take sides with either one of them. And you got to be very, very careful with that. And so you want to find somebody that is going to be very objective, but knows how to really challenge the two of y'all. You don't, I've often, you know, seen the extremes on that. But anyway, yeah. And also what I would say too, is try to make a scheduled time on when you want to explore. Try not to make it an interrogation session. Try to make it a knowing each other's world session. I want you to know your partner a little bit more today, you know, not an interrogation. And in that moment, if you're the one that has, you know, caused the hurt, when you take full honesty for yourself, you don't actually have to hide anymore. You could just let that person in. It becomes very freeing, you know, when you start talking about, you know, college years, childhood years, the, you know, whatever it is, letting your partner in again. Because it's not fun to hide. It's exhausting.
It is.
It really is. It's definitely not the thing that I see breaks all the marriages. I wouldn't even put it in the top three. I would say contempt, in-laws, and finances. Still, I've seen more divorces on those three than I have on affairs. I don't know what you think about this, but I also like the concept of a group. I think sometimes people can be very much in their head. I think it actually is healthy for both partners to realize there are other people out there that can I don't want to say normalize, but just like bring you down to earth a little bit. You know, that things, let's get, you know, especially because when you get your hands dirty and they get messy, you have to be kind of careful with that. Not careful, but you have to be willing to go there and just kind of like be used to playing with mud and just kind of let your body get used to it for a little bit. So that's where a group can be very healthy. Because I think sometimes when this comes out, people are just like, they get really startled. They don't want to go too deep. And they're like, oh, I don't like, no, we're going to get dirty. We're going to get really dirty. And I'm not talking, you know, about the affair. I'm more talking about, you know, we're going to get deep here, you know, and we're going to explore. It's enough hiding.
Well, I mean, it's forcing you to stretch versus not go into your danger zone per se, but definitely comfort zone.
Sure.
And I would just say maybe with a group to make sure that the group, depending on which partner or if both partners are joining it, that it's also in alignment with what you're trying to do in the marriage versus maybe feeding some of like, what is the group feeding, I guess, you know? and what's its function. So being mindful of that and how that fits in with the work that you're doing in the couple sessions too.
Yeah.
But it can definitely be helpful. And I think normalizing and validating, and it's just like building a community up around you. And and I think too, what one thing I explain or try to relay a lot in this, in the beginning process, is, you know, think of there being like this protector. It's looking for danger. It's looking for a threat. The alarm bells are going off. And if, as a partner, I can say, I see the alarms. What do you need to feel secure? What, how can, and I'm transparent. I'm open and I'm listening. I might hear the same question or the same thoughts multiple times, but if I can be patient and I can sit with that and say, I'm here, I'm with you, I'm not leaving when you're going through that, that protector backs off. It starts to feel like I'm being able to not only put the puzzle pieces into place to understand to have some clarity, but also you're there and you're not going anywhere. You're showing up. And again, I think that's really restorative. And so atonement is such an opportunity for healing. And I think that's where I see also a lot of hope, you know, being able to take that step.
Yeah.
Toward the end of that phase, there is a hope, there is a motivation, a momentum that's been built. Gottman will talk about marriage number one and marriage number two. Mm. And so what we were doing in marriage number one, it wasn't working, but how do we want marriage number two to be? And I think there is something to that. Like, we're now a shared vision for what we want this path forward to look like.
Right.
And what you were saying, we're also in sharing and being transparent, we're also challenging maybe some of the things that create that loneliness or fed that loneliness and or disconnect, right? Where we're actively doing something that's different.
I do want to say, though, one thing I do want to kind of point out, though, there is a two job at play. So we're making the assumption that these people want to heal from the affair. So I want to break, so let's break that down just a little bit. I want to be mindful of time because so we're assuming that you want to heal from the affair. So if that's the case, there's two things that do have to occur. Number one, there has to be an atonement, and you also have to be willing to forgive. 100%. And if you can't, and this is just my approach, that's okay. And I actually want to really, you know, and that's, I'm going to be religious here. That's actually the Jesus principle. Jesus even says it's okay if you can't free. So if anybody, any religious people out there, but I mean, even Jesus says, like, if you can't forgive, that's okay. That is actually reconcile that what he means by that. Like, he didn't say it's okay to not forgive. What I mean by that is it's justification to divorce. You know, it's because there are certain people that just can't do that. They can't get over it. So I want to kind of offer that, because if you do want to make this work, you do have to be willing to forgive. Mm-hmm. But if you can't, there's no shame or guilt. I don't think you should have feeling, quote, bad if you feel like you have to move on. That's messy, but most of the research out there that I've reached, like, that's just true. Cause what we don't want to see is like 15 years of, you know, John saying to his wife, you know, from 1997, I never actually forgave you for the affair. I'm like, whoa. Okay. Why did we do that? Like, whoa, why did we do that? Like, I don't think your wife probably would have wanted to spend the last, you know, 19 years of her, 18 years of her life. We could have really prevented that. And maybe it would have been better for both of you if you knew that that was the case. And I want to kind of lay that on people a little bit, because there are people out there that feel like they have to stay in the marriage, but they're unwilling to forgive their partner. And I guess for them, I want to say, why? Are you doing it to be a martyr? Are you doing it to punish them? If so, what are you getting out of it? You know, and so that might, you know, some people might push back and like, well, are you being too mean on the, no, it's just more like that. That is, we are assuming that those two things have to occur. And if they're not, And I would say the same thing for, you know, if you can't atone, it's not going to work. If you can't take full responsibility and you keep saying it's my wife's fault, keep saying my husband's fault, you're not going to heal. And if you can't forgive, you also probably can't heal. Now, I want to say this, though, that takes time and it takes a long time. Sometimes it can take a long time. Forgiveness sometimes, I don't even like to use the word forgiveness. In the very beginning, I like to use the word exoneration first. And then I also like to use a word like a little bit. So that's just to give you, you know, some context here. It's going to take, but you do have to be willing to kind of do that work. And if you can't, again, that's okay. You know, and when I say that's okay, it's there's because that's betrayal. And if you have there are just certain people, they can't come back to, from that. And it's probably best in that circumstance to maybe, you know, to walk away. That's my take on that. Yeah, I don't ever tell people to walk away, but that's kind of like my understanding.
Yeah, but that makes a lot of sense to me. And I really appreciate you pointing that out, because I think people, there is sometimes a level of, can be a level of shame too around that. Like, am I expected to stay in this? Am I not? Guilt in making the decision to walk away is a big one I see. But I think really also what you're talking about is, in the spirit of being transparent and honest, we also have to be honest with ourselves about what our limitations are and what we can and cannot do. Yeah. And if that means that there is just a level of hurt, betrayal, trauma that I just don't see myself as being able to recover from, it's just too great.
Sure.
Then that's okay.
Like, we want to love you. We want you to get help, and you're not a bad husband or wife if you have to leave. That's right. I really want our listeners to hear that. It's like, I don't think there is a lot of guilt. I think like people like, I got to stay for the kids. And like, well,
yeah, I hear that.
You can't forgive. And you're punishing yourself. You're punishing him. You're punishing her. And you know, I get your integrity. I love that. But you know, and yeah.
And I think that's why this part is so important, because regardless of what that decision is, it's about both people having a space that they can come to and completely put it out on the table of where they are.
Yeah.
Of just, again, having that complete honesty, transparency. And I think that regardless of what path is taken, that is also needed for healing in some way, shape, or form, whether it's healing in grieving the relationship and leaving that relationship with a level of insight and understanding and maybe even, I don't know, closure.
Yeah.
And having that discussion about how do we grieve this, maybe, or whether it be, again, transparency and what you need to reach that place of forgiveness and how can we support you in taking responsibility. But two people are curious and there's a level of motivation there to explore, is that something feasible, right? And I love what you said about time, because I feel like I've seen for different relationships based on their histories and whatnot, couples move through these things at very different paces, and that's okay. And I think sometimes you might take certain steps and then something comes up and we have to kind of go back to square one too. And that happens, and that's okay. It's just, it takes time. And it takes
time. It takes two, baby. All right.
Perfect timing.
Oh man. Okay. Yeah. Well, we tried it. We did it under there. We did it under 50 minutes. You know, I knew that this would be like a little longer. That's okay. But maybe next time we could talk about the second part, or we could take a break. I was thinking about maybe next time we could talk about the narcissist. Or
yes, I remember us talking about that one.
Kind of fun. Maybe they're kind of interconnected. So yeah, but we you know, we want to, again, we want to offer hope. I mean, I speak for you for a second, but Jessica and I both, this isn't the number one reason. We've seen lots of couples where there's been affairs and they've gotten help. We want to offer y'all hope. Again, check out Compulsive Solutions. They are fantastic. If there's any sex and love addicts out there that really need some resources, please go there, get some help right away. When it comes to atonement too, just we can't emphasize enough how much freedom we have seen as clinicians when someone just like takes responsibility for themselves. It's just, they are such happier people. And we just want to encourage, like, if you are a victim of this, one, we want to recognize you have been traumatized. That is a Gottman word. It's real trauma. And so you're going to need a lot of support. And also, forgiveness is going to take a very, very long time. Start with exoneration first. When I mean by exoneration, it's that slow processing, just understanding your, it's understanding who your partner is. And I'm hoping that that partner is letting you in and you're getting more information. And because you want trust to be reestablished again, because if trust can get reestablished, then you can move on to forgiveness and you could heal as well. You could really heal. You don't have to look through your every single, you know, text that your partner, you know, makes. You can actually get to the point where you trust them even so much more than you ever have before. And we just want to offer y'all hope. So this is healing.
It is. And maybe just to add to that really quick too, that something you said just made me think of this is that I think it's also a journey where people are learning more about themselves and there's hope in and of that, right? Where we're learning or reconnecting to needs, where we're learning, you're just looking also inward. And I think in that there's inherent growth of being able to look at yourself, which is not easy to do.
No.
So that takes a lot of courage.
Yeah. Well, thanks for doing this at 9:58 at night. And this is awesome. Okay. But thanks everyone for listening and to Drinks with Shrinks with Jessica and Peter. And we hope to see you all next time. See you later. All right. Later. So first, bye.